Okay, look, everybody, let's make a start, if there may be some one or two more coming into the call later. But we have an agenda that's been circulated and no changes suggested to it, so let's work our way through it. The first item is present and apologies. Christina, can you give us present and apologies received?
Sure. From the CCNSL today, we have Martin Boyle, Keith Davidson, Christy Spain, Stephen Deerhawk, Desiree Milosevic, Eberhard Lisse, Nigel Roberts, Bill Semick. And from liaisons, we have Carlos Aguera and Cheryl Langdonor might join later. From staff support and special advisors, we have Jeb Ackerhuis, Bart Boswinkle, Christina Nordstrom, and Bernard Turcott. And apologies from Kim Davis.
Thank you. On the note of apologies from Kim, Bernie, can we amend the 24th November meeting report to include Kim as an apology for that meeting as well? He sent that apology to me, but unfortunately I forgot to reflect it through to the meeting, so it's proper that we do record his absence.
Yeah, we'll note it in the...
Okay, and no other apologies received by anyone? And everyone mentioned was on the call. Thank you. Confirmation of the meeting report for 24 November, other than the amendment to include Kim's apology. Any other issues or missing items? We've got all the action points from that meeting listed for today. So.
I have a comment.
Sure, Bill.
On 522, where it says, I noted Diana stepping in, probably implied revocation. You know, I haven't looked at the transcript, but I think what I was saying was a revocation process, not an actual revocation.
Yes.
I'll be glad to correct that, Bill.
Thanks.
Thanks, Bill. Any further issues relating to that meeting report? If not, let's confirm the meeting report with the two amendments and move on to the significantly interested parties document 2.9, which hopefully we can finally approve today. Bernie, do you want to put it up on screen and give us one final look at the text we agreed on the last call? There's been no discussion as far as I recall, since that last meeting,
Yes, sir. I won't go through header and footer changes. I think everyone can be comfortable with that. The only changes of substance are in section 7.1, to be specific. Whereas agreed after material, and we can see it up on the screen, we added substantial. And at the end of the sentence, we added including the incumbent manager as per Desiree's request. So we'll finish going through it. I don't think there were any other changes. No. So those were the only changes from the 2.8 version.
Bernie, before Bill says this, there's no comma before an and.
Yes. So it goes legitimate and demonstrable.
Yeah. Yes, that's just slipped in. Sorry, we'll fix that.
Cheryl here. Sorry I'm late. I had to extract myself from another call.
Ooh, I hope it's not painful.
Painful.
Yeah, it can be.
Well, I shouldn't go there, should I?
Cheryl, we're just finalising the significantly interested parties document and just looking at 7.1.1 on screen and just realised we need to remove the comma after legitimate.
Thank you.
To make sense of English language. I think we can take that as an editing change that doesn't need a further round of
Hi, everyone. This is Catherine Reynolds joining. I'm sorry I'm late.
Hi, Catherine.
Hi.
Welcome. Catherine, for your benefit, saying we have got to the point on the agenda where we're looking at the significantly interested parties document final version, hopefully, and looking at 7.1.1 and just realised we have a slight grammatical error where we have legitimate, comma, and demonstrable interest, and there should be no comma. Notwithstanding that minor editing change, just seeking everyone's agreement that that should be the final text for 7.1.1.
Okay. Thank you.
And hearing no further comments, I propose that we proceed with the text, with the slight editing for the placement of the comma, and consider the document now approved and can progress the next stages of consultation. Is there any dissent? No, if not, we will proceed down that path.
Yay! Cheryl here for the record. May I ask, are we still planning on having this out for public comment before the seasonal break then? Because I've been threatening the at-large community that that's what their homework will be over this break.
I believe on the last call we agreed to not do that.
Okay.
And we will prepare the version of the public consultation document over the end of year break and have it ready for the first meeting of this group in the new year.
Okay, so then I can tell them that it'll be their homework in January.
Yes, or late January.
Okay. There is a reason to try and tie those things down. Certainly from the ALAC and at large's point of view, when pre-Costa Rica they're trying to put to bed all of the implementation of all of the review items, the 13 recommendations from their review. There's a huge amount going on in that time. And so we're trying to get a little bit of prior planning on things like what they're going to need to focus public comments and stuff on. So that's all.
Well, I think in that instance, Cheryl, we'll await for Bernie to circulate a final copy, unsullied copy with the errant comma removed. And I'm sure Bernie can do that fairly quickly. I think feel free, and also Carlos, feel free to share with the G folks as well the doctor.
Oh, good.
Because I think once we've given it our tick of approval, it's open to being shared around. So if people want to start studying and preparing for the consultation process, I don't think...
Perfect. The GAC people would probably appreciate that opportunity as well.
Yep.
Fantastic. Thank you. That's made my mind much more restful.
Okay, and I'm assuming nobody has any objections with that as a process. Martin, you have your hand raised. Martin? You're still on mute, Martin.
Indeed, yes. I raised my hand to suggest that we add the GAC. I tried to take it down somehow or other. I seem to just be getting the wrong place. And then, as you said, quite rightly, I failed to unmute.
I've taken it beyond for you.
Thank you so much.
Yep, okay, so it's just the point on the GAC. Nothing else. Can we move on? Bart, can you give us the process for the SIT consultation?
yes, it's fairly simple now. Say the public comment period has now formally been closed. We still wait for...
Sorry, Bart, that's on the consent document that's closed. I was thinking more of the SIT
consultation. Oh, the SIT one, yeah. They're a bit tied together. The SIP one, as Bernie said, we're going to prepare a public comment document, and we'll post it prior to the Costa Rica meeting for public comment. But as you said, we can share it, this version, we can share it because it's stable. We can share it with the at-large, the GAC and the GNSO in preparation of the public comment period. And I think the intention is to have the public comment period open up until the Costa Rica meeting, so people have plenty of time to provide comments. And then we take it afterwards. We take in the comments and prepare the final report. So the normal structure is we publish the interim report. That's for public comments. We take in the public comments period. We prepare a final report on a specific topic that will be sent to the GAC and the CCNSO for approval. And then if everything goes well, say both communities support it, then it will be sent to the board as a set of recommendations.
And on the consent consultation, while we're on the subject, that's now closed. There's been no comments received, is that right?
Yes, that's correct. So, maybe as you remember, say the GAC has a bit more opportunity to provide comments, if any. We'll finalise, say, the recommendations early January as well, and prepare the final report. So it's just a bit of editing and getting the process stuff in right, and then it will be sent to the GAC and the CCNSO and seek support for the recommendations.
Okay. Any questions or comments for Bart on the consultation process? Where we're going?
No.
We're all in agreement. Thank you.
Yep.
Just for the record, noting Paulos and Patricio have both joined the call. Okay, moving on. Terminology, approval of the definition of SIF. Bernie, anything on this?
I didn't recirculate it because it was in 2.9, but unless argument, we will use the definition we just approved in 2.9 as definition lexicon for significantly interested parties.
We've looked at the terminology extract for that, so assume everybody is in agreement. We're just taking the Section 7 recommendation out of the document we've just approved and inserting it in the terminology paper. No dissent. Excellent. Well done. So we'll move on then to item 6 on the agenda, which is the revocation. This should be a very interesting topic. I think on the basis of the progress that the working group is making, we could have a high-level look at this document today, and then this will become the thrust of our work for future meetings. We do have a meeting scheduled, I think, for the 22nd of December, but I think we're sufficiently progressing our work that we won't need that call. So if the working group agrees, I think we should just use this call as an opportunity to have the high-level review of revocation and then save it until we start our set of meetings in 2012. And with that, can I invite Bernie to walk us through the document. Thank you, Bernie. Oh, sorry, I see Eberhardt has his hand raised. So, firstly, Eberhardt.
What time of the day would the call be?
The 22nd of October. The 22nd of December meeting was scheduled to be at 0500 UTC, but I'm suggesting we scrub that meeting and we go to our next scheduled meeting, which is January the 12th at 1300 UTC.
Time-wise, it's good for me, so I abstain from any voting on the issue.
Okay. Thank you, Eberhard. So, Bernie, do you want to walk us through revocation?
Thank you, sir. I've labeled it 0.1 because it is an early draft. Before we get into it, I have been tearing through the applicant guidebook for new GTLDs, and I am glad to report that there are some sections which might be of assistance for us relative to the proper operation of the DNS. I haven't finished considering those in detail and getting them ready, nor do I think we're ready to look at them at this point, but just a marker that that was a great suggestion, and there is some info in there that I will circulate probably between now and our next meeting so people can start familiarizing themselves with that. Moving right along, background introduction I'm not going to spend a lot of time on. It's the stuff from the DRDWG, so basically the standard stuff. The objectives are cut and paste, identify applicable policies and procedures, analyze past cases, identify and analyze any issues arising, develop recommendations. Applicable policy statements and guidelines. We have RFC 1591, Section 3.4. Significantly interested parties in the domain should agree that the designated manager is the appropriate party. The statement of interest is the next paragraph. The IANA tries to have contending parties reach agreement amongst themselves and generally takes no action to change things unless the contending parties agree, only in cases where the designated manager has substantially misbehaved would IANA step in. This was the point that I had noted in the meeting notes that Bill asked to be corrected, just for those reference. The issues we brought up, of course, there is no documentation or guidelines as to how to establish substantial misbehavior. There is no documentation or guidelines as to what IANA stepping in involves. It is unclear if these clauses apply to delegated CCTLDs. Any questions on this part?
Yeah, I got my hand up.
Yes, Nigel.
Sorry, I was busily talking on mute. Nigel.
Okay. Two things. One is I think it's a minor edit. It may appear to some to be provocative. And the second part is to offer some substantial input. And the third one is a typo. The typo is misbehavior doesn't have two S's in it. So if you could double-check that throughout, please.
That's what we've noted about 15 times. we're quoting RFC 1591 perfectly, and in RFC 1591 it does have the two S's.
Then you should put SIC in brackets or something.
We'll be glad to do that.
But that's not the point. The first point is 3.1.2. I don't think that we should show the first paragraph in that quote. The designated manager, you just gone past it. Sorry, I beg your pardon. 3.1.1. Significantly interested parties in the domain should agree that the designated manager is the appropriate party. Now, Becky and I had some discussion about this, probably quite dry discussion at the last face-to-face. But it's clear to me that that refers to the creation of a CCTLD and appointment of the manager. I'm not at all convinced, and in fact, I would assert quite the opposite. I'm not at all convinced that that is a requirement that you can revisit every few months or years to say, well, people don't like you anymore, so you're now out. So I think if you simply leave it out and concentrate on the next part, which you've just run off the screen again, I think, the bit about the IANA tries to have any contending parties reach agreement, which obviously refers to any situation where there is contention, whether it's at the beginning, middle, or end, and only in cases where the designated manager substantially misbehaved would the IANA step in. This is actually quite interesting, and it's worthy of considerable exploration and interpretation. And the third paragraph is irrelevant for revocation. It's only for appointment of manager, whether on a first manager appointment or on a reappointment after a revocation. So I think again, you can leave the third paragraph out. Does that make sense?
I was just trying to put it in context. I was not trying to suggest.
No, I appreciate that, Bernie. I'm not having a go. What I'm trying to suggest is the context is self-evident if you just have the middle paragraph.
Yeah, I'm not taking it like that. But what I wanted to say is the original idea was to set it up like that. And personally, I'll be glad to take direction from the group however they want to see it. I have no particular hard feeling on this.
I see Bill also has his hand raised. Bill.
Yeah, I can't find misbehavior anywhere in RC 1591. And in the quote in 3.1.1, that's mis-behaved, M-I-S, and that's the only mention of the word behaved in the whole document. So let's get rid of that extra S. This is probably the 23rd time I've brought this up in the past year. Sorry. But,
20,
you know.
I believe.
Yeah. Okay.
Now, misbehaved is pretty correct there, Bill. You can object to the hyphen if you wish, but it's spelt correctly. It's elsewhere that there's another misbehaved with two S's.
Nowhere in RC 1591, perhaps in our own documents.
In this document. No, I'm not reading 1591. I'm reading
I know. I'm just saying that there's always been this discussion about leaving in MISS behavior.
Okay.
And I do sort of share, I'm rethinking my position last time about revocation and misbehavior. I do kind of share what I take to be Nigel's earlier, my understanding of Nigel's earlier comment, and that is, interestingly enough, this comment about substantially misbehaved and IANA stepping in is specifically in a section that it looks like was crafted to talk about selecting the initial designated manager. And so in that context, you know, it's difficult to think, well, how can there be a revocation if this is the designated manager who is either in the process of being selected or who has just been selected? And what is this substantial misbehavior in that context? And I think we should take a look at the context and figure out if it is, in fact, relating to existing designated managers or, more logically in terms of its placement in the document, relating to the process of selecting a designated manager, and perhaps one has been selected but not handed the keys to the domain, and there's been some local input, and perhaps the designated manager, for example, has bribed someone or whatever in trying to get the local input to support him. I mean, we don't know what misbehavior means, as you point out, Bernie. So I think we should give it a little more thought than I had initially given it when I said, oh, moves to the process of revocation. The point I was trying to make when I felt that it was moving to revocation was, I don't see this section as talking about what we have traditionally come to call a redelegation process, where some group or some association or an entity of the government steps forward and says, we don't like the way this is being done, and therefore this manager should be shut down and it should be passed to this other group that we like better, or to this other process of selecting a group we might like better. I don't believe this section is referring to that. I think it's referring to the initial selection of a designated manager and getting interested parties. So much for that.
Keith, it's Chris. When there's a space, I'd like to speak. Thanks.
Yep, I saw some hands appearing and then disappearing. So, Chris, with you.
I don't currently in front of me. I'm sitting in a taxi. But my immediate reaction to what Bill has just said is I don't agree. I don't think you can. I don't see how, from my memory of that particular paragraph, you can claim that it simply applies to an initial delegation. It's pretty clear from memory that it says where it's delegated, the delegated manager, or whatever the words are, misbehaves. Don't worry about what that means for a minute. It can be revoked and may be redelegated. Once it's delegated, it's delegated. It can't be revoked until it is delegated. And you can't draw some arbitrary line that says you are now past the point of initial delegation and have now become ensconced forever. The paragraph either applies or it doesn't, and I don't see how you can make a distinction between initial delegation or not. But as I say, to be fair, I don't have the documentation in front of me.
Can I follow up on that, because it's directly on that point?
Yeah, thanks, Chris. Nigel, by all means.
Chris, I totally agree with that. I think what Bill sees as my position is slightly... it's not misrepresented, it's just slightly harder that he's painting it as. Let's number these paragraphs 1, 2, and 3, and I know you're in a taxi right now. But what's clear from trying to interpret this document is that there isn't the separation of sections in the way perhaps you or I would draft it with draftsmanship, and somebody have appointment, operation, revocation in totally separate things. My point in this document is that paragraphs 1 and 3 are clearly and only relating to appointment of manager. So they're out of context. Leaving them out doesn't say anything either way, and it makes it clearer. That's why I want to see paragraphs 1 and 3 out of the quote. Paragraph 2 in the quote reads, "The IANA tries to have any contending parties reach agreement amongst themselves." It's staying to general principle, and it's John's golden rule, if you want to put it this way, that basically he was hands-off and says, basically, whenever anybody gets into an argument, you guys had better sort it out for yourselves. And the only time that we will step in is if there is, and this is this phrase again, substantial misbehavior. I think we need to focus on what that is and on what circumstances that is, but in principle I actually agree with what you're saying, that if there is substantial misbehavior, whatever that is, and we're going to look at that, I hope, if there is substantial misbehavior, the IANA seems to have some kind of reserve power to step in and rescue the situation. I think that was the intent.
Yep. Okay, thanks, Nigel. Bill, you have a comment.
Yeah, thanks, Nigel. I guess what I was trying to... I didn't make myself clear, I guess is the best way to put it. I'm raising this not so much as this is how it should be, but as pointing out the kind of confusion in this particular section. As you say, by isolating paragraph 2, you're trying to clear up the confusion, and I'm just not that satisfied that the confusion is cleared up. I think this section is confusing because of the context. It gives the appearance of wanting to say, oh, section 3.1 is... 3.11 is all about selecting a new designated manager, and section 3.12 is all about doing a satisfactory job. And so in that context, there is a question of what does it mean substantially misbehaved? Is there some other kind of misbehavior that should be looked at, or what? And so that's kind of what I was putting on the table, not so much that, there's no, this has no relationship to existing delegations. It's more a question of, well, what is it, trying to square the circle or whatever of the fact that this paragraph is in the middle of a section on new delegations. And I do, jumping ahead slightly, I think Bernie, in the material you've put together, I think you've done a good, you've helped me a lot in terms of figuring out a way around that problem, but I still see the problem as being something we should be aware of as we move forward with this topic.
Okay, thanks, Bill. Bill and Nigel, both of you still have your hands up. Could you take them down,
I'll
please?
Put it down.
Which I think indicates that Martin has the floor. Martin.
Thanks, Steve. Yeah, I actually have some difficulties with the idea that you go through a document and a section of the document, and then you start saying, well, that paragraph, even though it doesn't say specifically, only relates to one thing or another, and then putting that as a decision onto that paragraph, I think is wrong. I actually don't think that you can put your hand on your heart and say that the first paragraph in 3.4 only applies at the selection of the manager, because it doesn't say that. And when you go through into the next paragraph and the subsequent paragraphs, I think it actually is quite clear that it fits as a whole, that at one stage when you decide, this is how you do it, but equally, if you get to a stage where the community, the significantly interested parties, are beginning to realise that the designated manager is perhaps not the appropriate party, you know, that actually is perhaps a stage for some action to be taken. So I think going back to what Chris was saying earlier, when you actually look at the document, I don't think you can just pick and choose. It's not a menu. You've got to take it all in context. And so I would be very unhappy with the idea of just saying, oh, well, we're just going to use the second paragraph of 3.4. It's out of context, and it's an interpretation of what that particular paragraph means. Thanks.
Sure, a good point, Martin, and I think Nigel's suggestion that this is more about understanding the principle than trying to analyse the exact sort of word-by-word, character-by-character nature of the statement might be useful. Martin, your hand's still up, if you could take it down, and Eberhard, for the record, Cheryl was indicating a tick in agreement with Martin's comments. And Eberhard, you're next on the order.
Thank you. I don't agree with Martin. I think the charter of this working group is to this. So we cannot just say this is a done deal. We need to go and look at this. I do not really have my mind made up, but we cannot just say, because it's written in some part of the document, it by default applies to every situation. That's what we have to figure out what it applies to.
Yep. Thanks, Eberhard. Martin.
Yes, that is would be the fundamental mistake of following what Nigel is suggesting and just leaving the second paragraph in it, because then you are actually deciding that the first paragraph of 3.4 is not relevant in this case. I'm actually saying that you do need to look at that paragraph, you need to look at all of them, and you have to then see them in context. On a slightly larger point, and I think the same thing will come up when we look at the GAC principles, when you take a particular section of the document, just reading it in isolation is actually just a little bit dangerous, and I think you also have to try and understand some of the wider context of that whole document. I think there are other bits in section 3 about the appointment of the appointments of the manager and the role of the manager that are equally actually quite important when it comes to you then starting to think about what is substantial misbehavior and what is not.
I see Eberhard has his hand raised. I think we should really wind up the discussion on this topic fairly quickly, so we'll wind up with Eberhard's comments. But obviously we're going to continue to debate this in the future, so let's note some further work is necessary for this section. Eberhard.
Yeah, no, I just wanted to say that Martin and I then are in agreement that we need to review this much deeper in the future.
Yep. Thanks, Eberhard. So, Bernie, I think noting that this is going to continue to cause us some debate, can we move ahead with the document and stay at a fairly high level at this stage and just try and see if there's context around this statement as we proceed? Thank you, Bernie.
Thank you, sir. All right, not too bad. Only half an hour on 3.11. Let's see if we do any better on 3.12. And given we only have 17 other subsection points, probably if we allocate about 25 hours for this, we can get through the first reading of the document. It's a joke, guys. Okay, we've been together long enough.
I'm laughing.
Section 3.5, the designated manager must do a satisfactory job of operating the DNS service for the domain. Here, I think the whole section applies, and I've quoted the whole section. Under issues, we have documentation.
Can you scroll down?
We've got scroll control now. Nigel, we all have our own scroll control.
We do?
Yep.
Under issues.
So we do.
There is no documentation or guidelines as to what constitutes doing a satisfactory job of operating the DNS for the domain. There is no documentation or guidelines as to what constitutes persistent problems with the operation of the domain. There is no documentation or guidelines at level of persistent problems with the operation of the domain would cause the replication of the delegation. So that's what we have at this time for 3.12. And over to you, sir.
And I see Nigel has his hand raised. Nigel.
Okay. This is context from being there at the time as much as anything else. Clearly, and this is how I read it at the time, and this is how I read it 15 years later, this section has in mind the operation of the DNS with technical competence. It doesn't have in mind at the time, and it should now have in mind, so I'm not trying to exclude this, the operation of a registry system. Because very many registries, apart from the largest ones, were quite often done just by editing zone files until quite late in the game. So what this is actually referring to is that the zone should stay up and it should not go down, as quite a few TLDs did in the early days, disappear from time to time. And it's talking about technical competence in the DNS. Now, I would suggest that we need to explore this a bit more, a little bit further, and say in today's modern world, this also implies running a registry system with competence. But that's not what the words actually say, and this is where the interpretation comes forward, and this is where we can add value. That's my point.
Good point too, Nigel. Thank you. Any further comments? Stephen, I see you have your hand raised. Stephen.
Yeah, with regards to Nigel's comment that we should expand this to include registry operation as well, are we not like tiptoeing into the policy area here that we've been trying to avoid?
Can I answer that, or do you want to talk about it?
I think a brief answer, Nigel.
In a way, yes, but this is shall we say, what's known as purposive interpretation. You're interpreting based on the purpose of the section rather than the literal words of it.
Okay.
Yeah, I see it as a fairly fine line, but prepared to entertain it on the basis of it's not, the way you run the DNS requires these days is more likely to require the entire registry function rather than, as Nigel suggests, the flat file database zone file. That can be amended somewhat rudimentarily.
I agree with that. I just want to make clear that we seem to be tiptoeing into a policy area, but I'm not objecting to this. I just wanted to just
get that clarified.
Yeah, no.
I think we're just on the right side of it, but yes, you're right.
Well, Keith, it's first when you have a second.
Yes, I've got Eberhard first, then Chris.
Chris, you go first.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Thanks. I would just caution. I don't actually have an issue with what Nigel says in specific terms, but the point that he's using. But I would caution against the principle of doing that, because if you do that on this particular issue, you can't then take refuge in not doing it on a whole heap of other issues. And I would just be very cautious about taking that little step on the overall stuff that we're doing. May suit us on this particular point and not suit us on others.
Yep. Let's agree we're very close to the line. We just don't know which side of the line we're on at this stage. Eberhard and then Martin.
Yeah, I agree with what Chris said. The RFC clearly says that you must operate a registry in one form or other, without meaning you must operate a registry. You must deal with client response to requests. You must assign the names. If you have a zone with 500 names, you can do this in one or other form. But we should. I don't see any justification for this working group to start dictating that registries must be used or registry software must be used, even if two open source solutions are available, and if not, then or else. I don't see that.
Okay, thank you, Eberhard. And Martin.
Yes, thanks, Keith. Yeah, I must admit, I, like the two previous speakers, feel a certain nervousness of taking particular words that say satisfactory job of operating the DNS service for the domain, and then extending that to the whole of the registry operation. And I think that then gets back also to the sort of earlier point that for the global environment, you would expect and require the designated manager to be doing a satisfactory job of operating the DNS service for that particular domain. If the other things that Nigel is talking about are bad, they're going bad, then you would imagine that clause 4 would come in and that the significantly interested parties in the domain would suddenly start questioning whether the person was competent to do that wider job serving the local significantly interested parties and the local internet community. So I think he's trying to expand something that shouldn't be expanded, and that if there are concerns, then that would come up in a different area.
Yeah, but I think, Martin, you're right. You're linking the two aspects of 1591 together, and I think in attempting to tackle the topic of revocation, Bernie's highlighting that those are the current policy statements that should that could potentially influence the way you'll think about revocation in any case. I think that's been a useful discussion as well. Thank you all for that session. But Bernie, I think in the interests of time, can we continue to work our way through the document and just note the comments? I think, we have a number of points that I can see emerging that we could probably focus on, and we could probably focus a set of discussions on the working group list with those topics too. But in the interim, Bernie, please continue walking us through the document.
Thank you, sir. All right. Moving on to 3.2, GAC principles. The things I...
3.1.2?
No, 3.2.
Okay.
GAC principles 2005, 3.2.1, 7, principles relating to delegations and redelegations. 7.1, principle. Delegation and redelegation is a national issue and should be resolved nationally and in accordance with national laws, taking into account the views of all local stakeholders and the rights of the existing CCT of the registry. Once a final formal decision has been reached, ICANN should act promptly to initiate the process of delegation or redelegation in line with authoritative instructions showing the basis for the decision. Then we've got some other things under 7.2, where the registry operating the country code TLD does not have a formal communication with its national government and its core functions are operated under a different jurisdiction. Any action to redelegate needs to take account of the legal framework in the country where the registry is based. In the event of redelegation, restaurants in the CCTLD should be afforded continued name resolution or, if necessary, a mutually agreed period in which to transfer to another TLD. 7.2.2, in the case of a disputed redelegation request where the relevant country code TLD registry is based in another country and where there is not a contract specifying which national law should apply, the government and CCTLD should seek to find a mutually acceptable solution. Where there is no documentation or guidelines as to how to establish substantial misbehavior. It is strongly recommended that in the case of new delegations or redelegations, particularly where a registry is based out of country, national governments and registry managers should agree on the legal framework and specific contract conditions to be used to judge any subsequent disputes or redelegation requests. So I had a bit of a problem because, of course, GAC principles don't really directly deal with revocation. I thought were relevant after going over the document several times. And because it doesn't directly deal with the revocation of a CCTLD, the only issue brought up is how does this dovetail with RFC 1591?
We're not going to do that on this call.
I think Keith is asking us not to. Because we only have an hour and 7 minutes left. But anyways, I thought given our background, our charter, and where we've been at, that it was important to list those things and for us to at least talk about them.
Okay. And I think we'll entertain a quick discussion. I see four hands up, Nigel, Patricia, Martin, and Everhart. So, Nigel...
Mine's very quick. We found that it's the GAC principles that have got the misspelling of misbehavior, not RFC 1591.
Thanks, Nigel. Patricia.
seems to me that the text at the end of 722 doesn't really come from the GAG principles. It seems to be copy-pasted from someplace else with the misbehavior thing in it.
Yeah, I think you're right, Patricio. I'll make sure that I review that, and if it's incorrect, it'll be fixed.
So let's hear from the potential author of the spelling error, Martin.
Yeah, I was actually very alarmed to see that I might have spelled misbehavior in that way, and so I did go back and check the what the original GAC principles say. And in fact, where it says where there is no documentation or guidelines, it should say where there is evidence that local stakeholders in the internet community support the government proposal for re-delegation, etc. So that actually does need to, corrected. But I actually have a sort of slightly more fundamental point than that, because I think in this particular text, we were looking at the process of redelegation, and that by its nature, and I think for the whole of the text, there were quite a number of indications of the process that you would go through when you were significantly seriously decided that you needed to change your manager. A little bit like the RFC 1591 comment I made, I think the same thing actually does start applying here, that you can't quite just take sections the principles relating to delegations and redelegations, and then just read them off themselves. And this then goes back to, and I'm sure it will be the big discussion that we have when we start talking about what might be things that might be considered as being misbehavior. Well, those things actually then appear elsewhere in the GAC principles, and in quite a number of places in the GAC principles, and then indicate essentially the things that the local community, which RFC 1591 is supposed to also flag, that it is a matter of serving that local community. And then, of course, I think into this comes that sort of difference of interpretation with Nigel on the one side there's the DNS, which does affect everybody, but then there are a whole load of things that then start to affect that local internet community. Thanks.
Thanks. Martin, and good point. Yeah, I think, though, yeah, what Benny's obviously trying to capture here is the principles that are covered and within the GAC principles that relate to the topic. So in any case, we have two further speakers, Eberhardt and Bill, and then I think we should sum up and move on. So Eberhardt.
What does dovetail mean? And secondly, this 7.2 guidelines basically points out under what jurisdiction is to be handled if the manager sits outside. I do not agree with what Martin is saying with regards to the local internet community. I read the GAC principles, which I do not give any credence for my particular situation, to read that it is a national issue and should be solved in accordance with national law. Okay? So not in accordance with the views of the... not should be solved in accordance with the local stakeholders' want, in however, taking the views of stakeholders into consideration.
Okay, thanks, Eberhard. Your audio was breaking up quite considerably then, but I assume everyone got the gist of the conversation. Bill?
Yeah, I just wanted to point out a couple things in 7.1 principles. The words should be resolved and should act promptly are being used, which is in contrast to the use of the words must in the RFC. So in some ways, I think this is this choice of language is a reaffirmation of the concept of it being guidelines and not policy, which, of course, it says in 7.2. And then another point, which it would be good to include somewhere in here about the GAC principles, the principles themselves in 1.3, again, reiterate that the principles are a guide for the relationships. They're not intended to be binding. And if either the government or the registry decide not to adopt the principles, this cannot be held against the registry, and the registry still has a valid existence. So, again, it's a nice touch point or a nice reference as we try and pull all this together. But it wasn't the intention, and Martin, you can correct me, but certainly by the language, it wasn't the intention that this be sort of a international rule of law that governments have agreed to impose in CCTLD selection and redelegation.
Martin, your response?
That's exactly right, Bill, because ICANN is not an intergovernmental organization. It isn't in a position to write treaty text, and therefore, at the end of the day, what you have are a set of identifying rules, well, not even rules, guidelines to help people on their way and interpret what is happening, and so certainly that was something that ran through some fairly acrimonious and very difficult discussions over a number of years as to exactly what the status and what you could actually formally tell people might be. Part of that problem is also based on the fact that the previous GAC principles, the GAC principles from 2000, were actually quite authoritarian, and so in fact the GAC in 2005 was stepping back from that. It's a bit of a shame we don't have any GAC people on this call. Because I think that is probably quite a real discussion that we have to have with the GAC on how they would see the sort of expectation of those principles. And certainly I see the messages that they're giving, that the various principles documents that they've submitted to ICANN are in fact advice. And therefore, ICANN should be turning around and very clearly saying if there's anything in the advice that we can't accept.
Okay, thanks, Martin. I think I can see some significant further discussion on this point too, but Bernie, please continue tracking through the document.
Okay, so that would conclude our GAC principles section, and we would move on to section 4, relevant procedures. As agreed in the previous document, we've got the note, these procedures are only presented for information on current practices and are not considered as applicable policy statements for the FOI working group. Hopefully that still meets the requirement. The procedure we're talking about, of course, is understanding the CCTLD delegation redelegation procedure from the IANA website. The quote is there. We have under the heading Requesting Confirmation from Contacts. Once IANA has completed its verification and analysis of the material supplied in the request, it then requests confirmation of the redelegation from the current administrative and technical contacts, if applicable, as well as the newly proposed administrative and technical contacts paragraph. If confirmation is immediate from all parties, IANA proceeds with the next step in the process. In those cases where confirmation is not received from one or more parties, comma, further consultation is necessary, full stop. IANA's experience has been that a failure to receive confirmation from the existing or proposed contacts can significantly delay and complicate the process.
We have Eberhard very eager to say something.
I think I just want to finish my issues and then I'll turn it over to people to shoot at it.
Yeah, sure.
422.
No, I just wanted what dovetail means.
Pardon me?
I just wanted to know what dovetail means.
Oh, from the previous point. Dovetail means, how does it fit in? How does it work with?
It's a carpentry term that refers to how you might put together the drawers in wooden drawers where there is a dovetail joint, which means two pieces of wood fitting tightly together on their own without the need for glue or nails or other assistance to their help.
No, but thank you, but I didn't understand the term. Thank you.
Yeah, sure.
Schwalbentransferbindung.
All right, I'm going back to my issues. There is no documentation or guidelines as to what can significantly delay and complicate the process implies. It is unclear how a redelegation can proceed without the approval of the incumbent manager, if it is to be considered a transfer as per RFC 1591. So that's what I've got under this, and I'll be glad to throw it open to questions and comments.
Do I get the floor?
Martin.
I was quite happy for Chris to go first if he wants to.
I wasn't going anywhere.
It was nice.
Oh, right, three. Okay.
You're in a taxi.
No, right. Hopefully he is going somewhere, yes.
Well, yeah, you can look at quite big bills if you're in a taxi going nowhere. I think just a sort of little point I'd make on 4221 and the significant delay. I've raised this point before when we said that we would come back to derelict managers at a later event. And I'm also sort of conscious that the same thing actually happened when .au was being redelegated, that the manager at the time just essentially refused to communicate. I think in both of those cases, you do have to sort of stop and say, well, if the original manager ain't there any longer and somebody else is running for it, we probably need to just consider that as a particular case in hand. And then also, the fact that somebody refuses to answer, should that actually be some good reason for just seriously delaying the process? So all I want to do is just sort of flag up that I think that there is at least one, perhaps two, important issues to see behind 4221.
Thanks, Martin and Nigel.
Okay, I'm going to raise an objection to having this IANA procedures section in here at all. There's two points to this. The first is that it's entirely procedural and tactical. There's no policy or strategic merit to this whatsoever in our discussions. And secondly, even if there was somehow hidden away in there something that we should be interpreting, it's not about revocation.
Okay, thanks. Nigel Eberhardt.
Didn't we say at some stage we were not looking at this particular document?
I believe what we said, Eberhardt, is that we need it to be very clear that it's not being looked at as policy, which is what the point of the note in 4.1 is. However, this is the only procedure which applies to taking a CCTLD and moving it from one manager to another. And as such, that's why I included it versus the cases that we've studied. So that's why I've got it in there anyway.
Okay. I see I've got a speaking order of Bill and L, but Eberhardt, I think you're probably after a point of clarification, so I'll go to Eberhardt first. Eberhardt, you're still on mute, potentially. Okay, you don't want to talk to us.
Sorry, I was on mute. This is very confusing, and even more bound to confusing our GEC representatives who are only on occasionally participating on these calls. I think we should remove this.
Yeah. Okay, thanks. Bill?
Yeah, I have a similar opinion of it, although I wasn't going to make a big deal about it at this point, because I think Bernie put it in here purely as informational. But at any rate, if I go through my notes here, the first note I wrote on this page was, what's this got to do with revocation? And lo and behold, others share my question. I know that it's the redelegation without approval or agreement by both sides that you're trying to get at, but it looks to me, looking at this document, Bernie, that this whole redelegation, the historical redelegation process is procedurally being proposed to be replaced with the idea of a revocation and then a new manager, and putting in this policy sort of muddies the waters a bit, I guess.
Yeah. Thanks, Bill. Nigel?
Just very, very briefly at the end of this. This is about consensual redelegation 4.2.1. And therefore, for the reasons I said earlier, I think this whole section should come out.
Thanks, Nigel. I think, again, let's keep working through the document, recognising we have about 40 minutes left for this call at maximum. So please proceed, and we'll take these comments into account along the way. Thank you. Thank you, Bernie.
Okay. Hopefully we've gone to, just to make the point, I guess, Nigel was talking about under 4.2.2.2. It's unclear how a redelegation can proceed without the approval of the incumbent manager. So I think I understand the points that were raised, but after beating up on all of this, I thought it was useful to put it in, and it's easier to take stuff out if that's the will of the group. Analysis of IANA reports on redelegation. and kept it simple here. IANA reports on redelegations do not always note or document if consent was provided by the incumbent manager or ACNTC for the transfer, and in such cases almost never explain why it is not documented. Because of this, it's difficult to obtain a clear understanding of how many redelegations are unconsented by the incumbent manager. Additionally, minutes of ICANN board meetings which deal with redelegations of CCTLDs rarely document if a redelegation is unconsented. So I think that's the only thing we can say, and certainly people can make the argument that it may not be relevant to revocation, but given where we come from, again, I thought it might be useful to throw in something relative to this, because certainly the IANA reports never talk about a revocation. I'll throw it open for questions or comments.
I quite like what's in Section 5.
Okay, one comment from Nigel. No other comments. Carry on, Danny.
All right, you're just trying to lull me to sleep. I know. I can't wait to see what's coming here. Summary and analysis of issues. There is no definition of what is meant by revocation. The introduction of Section 3 of RFC 1591 states that a new top-level domain is usually created and its management delegated to a designated manager all at once, indicating that a CCTLD being in the root and the delegation of the management of that CCTLD are separate elements. As such, revocation could be interpreted revoking the right for the incumbent manager to manage the CCTLD, but would not require removing the CCTLD from the root. So again, those are our points for discussion and talking, and oh my lord, Nigel Scott is hand up. All right.
Nigel.
I really like 6.1.1. I think it actually gets to the heart of this sentence, because it uses the word usually in RFC 1591, which means that's what's expected. But it clearly captures that RFC 1591 considers these two operations as distinct things.
Thanks, Nigel. Edahan. Edahan, you're still on mute.
Can I get one of those fans?
sorry, there I am. Revoking the right for the incumbent or revoking the right of the incumbent?
Maybe Bill can help us with the grammar, given he's always wordsmithing things quite well.
I think
maybe Becky should, if he's on the next call or something.
Yeah.
Or yeah. Keith is quite good at these things also, I will note.
I think let's leave it in the interim. I think it's a point of clarification, but let's stay at a fairly high level.
All right. 6.2, there is no policy basis for a redelegation that is not consented by the incumbent manager. If there is no consent for a redelegation from the incumbent manager, then the domain cannot be redelegated. It is possible that the delegation to the current manager could be revoked, then delegated to a new manager. So just trying to tie it in to what was in Section 5 when we were talking about documentation of redelegations not indicating if there was consent. I'm not sure if L put down his hand and has got it up again, but let's go for it.
Want to make sure that we don't forget to review this particular issue from the previous paragraph. I attach considerable importance to it.
I will note it in the meeting notes, and I'm sure it will clearly show up in the transcript. Eberhard.
Excellent.
Thanks, Eberhard. And Nigel.
This is where I'm really unhappy about using the word delegation, because it's clearly being used in its plain English sense and not in the technical sense here. I'd like us to try and use some more neutral language. I mean, I know appointment is almost just as bad, but we really can't imply here that it's a delegation, as if it's the seigneur who holds the fief on while the sovereign thinks doesn't change his mind.
Nigel, just to be clear, you're talking to the point on 6.2.1 at the end of the sentence?
Yes. The word delegation to the current manager could be revoked. So clearly, delegation to current manager is delegation in the plain English sense.
Ah, okay, that delegation. Okay.
So I would say... revoking the... Hang on, we're sorry.
I think what Keith is telling us is let's not try and wordsmith this.
I'm not trying to rewrite it on the fly. I'm just trying to raise a flag so that you can bear my point in mind when you revise it.
Yeah, I think I understand your point, and I'll note it, and we can beat up on it. As Keith has said, I think we'll be playing with these words for quite a few months, so... Okay, noted, 6.2.1.
Yeah, I think it's more a question of the direction and purpose of the document and staying at a principal level over there. And I think given that it's likely we'll be a month away from our next meeting, let's not try and get too much into the finessing of words that stay at the intent level. Okay, thanks, Benny.
6.3, although there is a policy statement dealing with revocation, section 3.5 of RFC 1591, which is the DNS operation clause, there is no documentation including processes or procedures regarding revocation. 6.3.1, it would seem reasonable for the FOI working group to develop basic guidelines to frame the development of processes and procedures for the revocation of CCTLDs by INS. These guidelines should include, and there's a truckload of stuff, so before we get into the details, maybe we can just talk to 6.3 and 6.1 and see if there are thoughts or comments.
Nobody appears to have any comments. Oh, Eberhard, please proceed.
Are we now really going to develop policy, or are we interpreting policy? I think we agreed that we do not do anything that will create policy. We just interpret existing policy. If there is no policy, we say there is no policy, and then a policy development process can be decided upon by the CCNSO.
I think providing that we... make suggestions that could be that are interpreting policy, and if they're around a set of potential guidelines or roadmap for IANA to use, then I don't think that's inventing policy. I think it's just clarification. Abraham,
Keith, you, me, and nobody else can interfere in the bilateral relation between the IANA function contractor and any given CCTLD. Has no position, the FOI working group has no position to make such policy. It's as simple as that.
Yeah, I don't think this is an issue of making policy. This is a question of the working group along with IANA. And there's no IANA staff on the call, but if there is agreement that this is within policy and this set of processes or procedures provides clarity in those policies, then I don't think we have a problem. Anyway, I see Stephen and Nigel with their hands. Stephen.
Can either you or Bernie flesh out a little bit for me what you mean by basic guidelines as opposed to guidelines in general? I mean, what's that distinction? Are we?
Well, if I can take that one, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
I think what we've tried to say is Eberhard is quite right. We're not developing policy. I do not see this as talking about developing policy. There is a very clear reference in Section 3.5 of RFC 1591 that there can be revocation. So I don't think we're talking about inventing stuff here. What we don't have, what Section 6.3 is talking about, is that although there is a mention of revocation as a policy statement in RFC 1591, there are no processes or procedures anywhere which refer how that could go through. The second point is that it's not really the FOI working group's job to develop processes or policies for IANA. However, as Keith has mentioned, it's our job to sort of maybe draw a box around it as to what the FOI is thinking about when it's interpreting policy statements so that IANA can use that while it's thinking about developing a process or a procedure.
They would be under no obligation to consider it, though.
Well, I think if we go back to our original starting point from the DRD, what we said is we'll provide advice and guidelines for how we're interpreting the policy, and if it doesn't work, then the CCNSO, upon evidence of it not working, can decide to have a policy development process as per the CCNSO charter, and then ICANN will be bound by that.
Okay.
And just incidentally, we've been here already with, I think, was it in the consent document, we've got some suggested processes for IANA in terms of how it verifies consent. In any case, three speakers, Bill, Eberhard, and Nigel. So, Bill.
Bernie, I'm a little confused by the construction of and the relationship of Section 6 and Section 7, one where we're proposing some things that the guidelines that should include certain steps that need to be taken, and the other where we're asking IANA to develop the processes and procedures for those certain steps to be taken, some of which are duplicative or whatever, and others which are different. Can you give me a little explanation or help me understand the purpose of these two different sections, 6 and 7?
I think, to be honest, this, as I said when we started looking at this document, this is version 0.1, and I think under 6.3.1 was a bit of a scratch pad for me before I got to Section 7. So in a future version of this document, I would probably cancel out everything under 6.3.1, to be honest.
Thanks, Benny. Eberhard, then Nigel.
As I have asked in the past, how does the new NTIA FNOI play a role here? It states quite clearly that IANA, the IANA function, IANA itself and its staff must be totally separate from policy and things like this. So I think this is. I agree with Bernie. Maybe you should take this out next version.
Well,
to be clear, I was talking about 6.3.1.1. Stuff under 6.3.1 and not taking out Section 6.3.
Okay, thanks, Eberhard. Nigel?
No, I meant 6.3.1, only 6.3.1. It's nothing wrong with saying that there is no documentation around, and but if policy needs to be done, then it's for a development process and not for IANA.
Well, I think here again the issue is, are the principles that are included in RSC 1591 and iterated to the extent that they are in the GAC principles, are they clear enough that we believe that this set of statements, if IANA were to agree to them, provides clarity to existing policy, or is it an invention of policy? And that's a test that we'll have to apply constantly to this work. But my belief is that there's sufficient to say this is clarifying policy rather than inventing policy, and it's describing a process, not a policy itself. Nigel has a hand raised. Nigel.
Indeed. And again, I want to come at this from the bottom up rather than the top down. Let's just think about what the scope is of what this working group is. It's for the interpretation of existing policy. It's out of scope for us to make policy. It's out of scope for us to make execution procedures. Our job is to interpret. That means to explain what the policy means and flesh out the construction of the policy. In other words, to dissect it and expand on what it means. This section, the whole 631, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and so on, perhaps they're all very fine things, but they're out of scope for this working group. These are things which should be created by the appropriate party when they know what the policy means. So, for example, some of what you've put in here, Bernie, is right to say the policy implies that if a revocation is contemplated, a fair hearing should be given. But that is the strategic statement whereby we're putting colour on the existing policy, and you have to connect that to something in RFC 1591, for example, the non-existent IDNB. But by saying the IANA function must provide a formal notice, they must do public notice that's valid for 28 days and things like this, that's executory and is out of scope. So I think this is very thin ice, and I think it's better that we take it out as is and we address how do we put in the best parts of it in a form that fits in with the scope of the group.
Yes, and I agree with you. And as I'll repeat, this was a bit of a scratch pad. I was not thinking these would survive, but rather to do exactly what you're talking about, give us a framework for how we could rewrite this and make sense of it relative to our mandate.
Marvelous. I didn't think you bought yourself a black helicopter.
I think also, Nigel, it would be interesting to have Kim's input from an IANA perspective as to what may be going too far, etc. So I think on a future call we'll certainly have that conversation. Martin has a stand up. Martin.
Thanks, Steve. I was sort of roughly in line with Nigel's analysis as we came through to the end. Of it. In fact, I must admit, I started drawing a different conclusion, and I think my conclusion is that, we don't define process, and perhaps 6311 to 6317 end up getting rather prescriptive, but I think the direction I would go in is that as we start doing the interpretation of the policy that is already in place, we probably also need to start making sure that we're putting in place the right questions to ask. So in other words, we actually flag out the fact that
there needs to be some form of consultation or that there needs to be some sort of process that allows or ensures that the right information is collected. And I say this not because it actually helps IANA or the IANA contractor or ICANN more generally, but in fact it helps those people who are looking at the state of play in their country to understand properly what the processes are and put the right thinking in place before they even start down this route. I see it a little bit as being an interpretation of part of that interpretation of policy that the information you need to underpin your decisions. Thanks.
Thanks, Matt. Okay, I think Benny, please continue.
Thank you, sir. That was 6-3. 6-4, there is a policy for revoking the delegation of CCTLD from manager for persistent problems with the operation of a domain, 3-5 of RFC 1591. There is no documentation of any procedures or guideline to implement this policy statement, and there is no documentation of it ever being used by ICANN. And what we've got under that is IANA should undertake a public process for developing criteria for establishing what persistent problems with the operation of a CCTLD are, which could result in the revocation of the delegation of a CCTLD. I don't know if Martin still has his hand up or if he wants to talk to this, but I'll throw it open to the floor.
Yeah, I did actually want to talk to it because 6.4.1 sounded to me horribly like defining criteria of what serious misbehaviour concept actually is, which I think is not for IANA, but rather for us to see whether we can understand the documents enough to tell them that. The second point I think I've raised is that that section 3.5 of RFC 1591, when I read it, I was sort of a bit, for the first time, I was a little bit surprised that here you have somebody unilaterally deciding what is substantial misbehaviour and then going ahead and doing. But as time's gone on, I actually do take comfort from the concept that, from the statement that it's never been used, from which I would actually draw in that here is something that is exceptionally unusual, that it really is that somebody has completely and utterly lost the plot and everybody else is suffering, and this is one of the reasons why I didn't like us stepping close to that line in the earlier discussion. It just seems to me that 6.4.1 is very, very dangerous area for us to be going down that particular route, it's almost at the point of saying, well, okay, if we do have to define what the circumstances are, then even there, I think it's actually very, very difficult to say in any sort of clarity, these are the circumstances that would happen. It's one of those cases that everybody will know it when they see it, and they wouldn't really expect to see it.
Thank you, Martin. Eberhard.
I support Martin, and I do it from a from the angle of that the new FNOI from NTIA clearly states that IANA cannot develop policy and their staff cannot even be involved in any policy making of that. This is a policy. If there is such a policy, then ICANN has to make it. That means it's a CCNSO PDP. IANA cannot do this. That would. And you recall that I've been shot down quite significantly when I suggested that we review the FNOI because it may have impact on our work to this in the group.
Actually, just a comment, Eberhard. I was reading through the statement of work and contract for the future IANA contractor, and interestingly, there's been quite a substantial back off in terms of IANA, you know, the clarification that applies to the contractor is IANA will not create policy, but may be involved in policy development where requested to do so. As a matter of interest. Anyway, Bill, you have your hand raised. Bill.
Yeah, on the question of no documentation of any procedures or guidelines to implement revocation, you know, I think Nigel may have mentioned this earlier, but if you actually look at RFC 1591 and read the relevant section 3.5, it's all self-contained. It says it must do a satisfactory job, and then it says what these things are that must be done. Management of the assigning of domain names, which in my book I would call the registry process, but that's dubious, I guess, and other things. These are all technical requirements, and in the cases where there are persistent problems with the proper operation, and the operation has been defined in the paragraphs above, the delegation may be revoked. It doesn't say it will be. So I think we should just circle our wagons around Section 5 and work on that as the process for revocation.
I think point well made, Bill, and I agree. I think it is quite clear, and I don't think any of the assertions that Bernie has included in any way deviating from that proper management of the DNS as outlined in 1591. Okay, look, we only have about 15 minutes left for this call and quite a bit more to get through. So, Bernie, can we, you know, having noted the comments, Bernie, can we continue now?
Yes, sir. 6.5, the policy statement that IANA may step in for substantial misbehavior, the two S's, yes, I know, Section 3.4 RFC 1591 raises several issues which we've gone through in Section 3 of this document. Does the statement apply to delegated CCTLDs? What constitutes substantial misbehavior? There is no documentation or examples of what constitutes IANA stepping in. Should this be interpreted to mean revocation? So those are just questions relative to the issues, and they're the same questions that were brought up in Section 3.1. 6.6, it's unclear how Section of the GAC principles matches up to policy statements for contested redelegations or revocations, which is a fairly clear restatement of what was in that section. There is no requirement for IANA reports to clearly document and explain redelegations where the incumbent manager has not consented, which is basically a statement we grabbed from a previous document. I just thought it was useful to bring it in here, given our context. So I'll take questions on 6.5, 6.6, and 6.7.
Okay, any questions? Nigel?
I presume we're going to try and answer the questions in 6.5. That's the first point.
Pardon me, sir, I didn't get that.
I presume we're going to answer these questions, 6.5, 1, 2, and 3.
I guess that's part of our job.
6.6, I don't understand. And 6.7, I'm concerned about slightly, because it says there's no requirement for IANA reports to clearly document and explain redelegations where the incumbent manager has not consented. We've said that there aren't any.
No, we said it shouldn't happen.
Yep, okay.
What I'm trying
then I think we need to rephrase this ever so slightly, but I know where you're going.
Yeah, I'm just making sure the intention here is that if there is something that is done, that it's clearly documented that it's being done.
Yeah, I see where you're going, and again, the way it's put, again, I don't want to admit of the possibility that there are redelegations without consent. There can only be a revocation followed by a new appointment.
Yes, I'm sure we can work on the wording, but you understand what I'm trying to do here.
Yep, yeah, I think we're good.
Okay.
Thanks, Nigel. Anything else before we move to the recommendation section? If not, please proceed, Benny.
Thank you, sir. Now, I have to say, I didn't think we'd get to Section 7, so I'm sort of really fully unprepared at this point because you've thrown me off.
Point of order.
Yes.
Nigel.
It seems we're getting close to the end of this call. Why don't we put this off so you can do some further work on 7?
Stop here, yes.
I guess the recommendations are the infinitely flexible aspect. So finessing the rest of the document first and allowing the recommendations to flow is probably not all that inappropriate. Abbott has his hand raised. Abbott, you're still muted.
Yes. Sorry, so I've unmuted. Just for the record, I have just dug up the latest statement of work, section C25, separation of policy development and operational roles. The contractor shall ensure that designated IANA function staff members will not initiate, advance, or advocate any policy development related to the IANA functions. The contractor staff may respond to requests for information requested by interested and affected parties as enumerated in Section C13 to inform ongoing policy discussions and may request guidance or clarifications as necessary for the performance of the IANA functions. This contradicts what Keith said in this regard. I just wanted to put it on the record.
Yeah, and I think that's providing excellent clarification of the point I made that IANA can... not develop policies, they can request policy clarification and they can be on request of other parties involved in discussions that may lead to policy development. So thanks, Everhart, for that. So the proposal from Nigel was to potentially suspend any discussion on the recommendations in this report. Bernie, is there any specific aspect of the recommendations that you feel should be covered on today's call?
I think just at a high level we might want to just scan the ideas, but I do agree with Nigel that given the input, I'll be going over this and the next version of the document will be interesting. I also think that given the input and our experience, we've got a whole bunch of points to put on the mailing list for discussion. So I can go through a very high-level go-through and take a few comments, and then we'll be done.
Okay. I think if you can skip through in 3 or 4 minutes, I think that would be okay. But I see, firstly, Eberhard has his hand raised. Eberhard.
As usual, Bernard, can you please do this in small chunks?
Yes. I posted a note with your comments and said that we would do it that way, and I'll be sticking to that.
Yes. Thanks. And can Eberhard? Oh, no, hand's gone. Yes, Eberhard.
I just actually wanted to post my agreement, but my sticky fingers find it difficult to find the right button to push down. They are all square. I'm in a maze of little square buttons.
Are they all alike or all different?
Okay, thank you, Nigel.
Okay, save you having to read this out. 7.1, IANA should undertake the steps necessary to implement the following interpretations and policies. That grates on me. You can't implement an interpretation. IANA should take note of the following interpretations.
I believe I've cut and pasted that from our two other documents, so if we want to change
but
it,
I didn't have no problem.
It
in the other two.
Yeah, I think I've expressed my slight concern with that too, because it is a kind of an instruction to IANA.
Yeah.
But, let's worry about that later rather than now. Okay, Bernie, I think a very quick step through.
All right, 7.1.1, definition of revocation of a CCTLD. Revocation is used in RFC 1591, refers to the rescinding of the rights and responsibilities of the incumbent manager to manage the CCTLD. I don't want to argue about this. It's just a placeholder. I did not spend a lot of time. I just said, okay, let's put a placeholder, and I will get beaten up for it, but I try to keep it sane, and we can destroy it at will. Process and procedure for revocation. IANA needs to establish a process and procedure for the revocation of a CCTLD. And 7.1.2.2 and 7.1.2.3 are derivatives of the points we've talked about and will change, so I'm not going to go through those. 7.1.3, interpretation of IANA stepping in per section 3.4 of RFC 1591. Again, a placeholder, no one get your guns out. IANA stepping in per section 3.4 of RFC 1591 should be considered as meaning that IANA can apply a range of actions from mediation to revocation depending on the situation. 7.1.4, substantial misbehavior as a basis for IANA stepping in per section 3.4. The incumbent manager can be considered to have significantly misbehaved, no longer meets the key requirements for supervising domain names in the CCTLD for which it is responsible, section 1 of RFC 1591, or 7.1.4.1.2, no longer meets the key requirements of supervising the domain name, and there's a spelling mistake, in the CCTLD for which it's responsible in the country or territory associated with the CCTLD, as per section 1 of RFC 1591. 7.1.4.1.3, the administrative contact name by the incumbent manager does not reside in the country or territory associated with the CCTLD, as per section 1 of RFC 1591. 7.1.4.1.4, substantial failure to act as a trustee for the CCTLD, as the term is used in section 2 of RFC 1591. Note, the term trustee is used to describe the manager's duty to serve the community and not describe the specific legal relationship the manager to the delegated domain. 7.1.4.5, I think I should be shot for, but that's okay. I'll let Nigel do that. It is convicted of criminal offense, which is directly relevant to its role as manager of CCTLD. So, however, 7.1.4.1.1 to 7.1.4.1.4 are, I picked up items from section 1 and 2 of RFC 1591. And there we go. So before we beat this up to death, there's definition of persistent problems. IANA needs to establish and publish a clear set of criteria to define persistent problems. And the stuff below it was probably myself getting carried away. Applicability of GAC principles, IANA should respect applicable laws and court decisions. And 7.1.7, IANA procedures for delegations and redelegations should clearly document. So that's about where we are. Again, these are just my personal bits that I dragged out in creating a straw man which we can beat up on. So go for it.
Okay. Thanks, Bernie. Nigel.
Actually, I think it's helpful what you've written there. It's going to require some knocking into shape and, like you say, probably pistols at dawn from time to time. Whenever you say the Ayana shall define something, my instincts say, no, they shan't. That's our job. We're the interpretation crew. Whenever you say something that looks like we are defining policy, that's a PDP job. And when you do we're defining processes, that's executory. So I think this wanders all over all three. And I think we need to tease out and triage them. But there's some good stuff in here.
Yeah, I completely agree with you.
Okay. Thank you, Nigel. Fully agree and support that.
Have I just put it up again?
Yeah,
I have. Sorry.
Look at that. Eberhard.
I think we should review my previous request that we should clearly differentiate between Ayana as a function and Ayana as a manager or as a contractor. All right? Ayana is... What is Ayana? Ayana is a function that is operated. The function cannot respect anything. Ayana... About policy. Who makes policy? I think we must be a little bit more clearer, and I note that this is the first draft, so I just wanted to put my thoughts into the process.
Yep. Okay. Thanks, Eberhard. And I think that draws us to the end of discussion on the document, and I think it's been a very valuable discussion, so thank you all very much for your contributions along the way. I think it gives Bernie some serious headaches to do some revisions, but I think we'll have a slightly more robust document in the next iteration as a result of the discussion. So well done, everybody. And I think in drawing the meeting to a close, in any other business, I have put up on the agenda there my proposal that we don't meet on the 22nd of December, but we do meet on our next scheduled date of 13 January at 1300 UTC.
Keith, you put 12th on the note.
12th January at 1300 UTC. Anyway, I'll confirm that to the list if everyone's happy with that. I notice Cheryl's agreeing with that vigorously. So if there's nothing further from anyone, no additional items, any other business, no, going once, twice, sold. Okay, thank you all. Thank you all very much for a very useful meeting and for a very useful year. We won't be talking again till next year, so enjoy your year-end festive season in the best form you possibly can, and we'll talk to you anew and refreshed on the 12th of January. Thank you all.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Guys. Take care.
End of year to everyone. And if anyone gets into withdrawal because we've got so many weeks between our calls, just give me an email and we can set up a call and I can let you beat up on a document.
Thank you, Danny.
Thank you.
Bye. Danny,
still there?
Yeah.
I sent you a Skype message saying, can I have this as editable text so I can play around with it, please?
Okay. No problem. Thanks.
Because I got withdrawal symptoms. Thanks a lot. Goodbye.
Bye.
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 Bye-bye.